Yeah, so what I want to talk about today is loving compassion, something you know, that we are always circling through in our community, and it's always important to come back to, especially somebody's knocking at our door. Especially because, you know, obviously, you know, we are aware of the news, we're aware of the latest, you know, tragedy in Ukraine, you know, this unleashing of violence, destruction, pain, suffering, you know, and, again, the world, like individuals, we don't go big picture. We just kind of go through reactivity. Each crisis, each situation, we just react, and we often react emotionally. But Buddhism teaches us to see the big picture. What's really going on here? And, you know, most importantly, if we want to end this cycle, how do we do it? The cycle of violence, the cycle of war. And we can't do it, you know, again, if you see what happens, you know, beside the, you know, responding to the humanitarian crisis of all the refugees, you know, the answer on both sides is what? Pour in more weapons. Pour in more weapons. And I can understand that. And yet we know that just continues the cycle in this world. So that's why I want to talk about love and compassion at a time like this, because there is another way forward for the world. And it's not talked about in the media. It's not talked about by the politicians. It's really traditionally in the domain of spiritual religious leaders. I mean, this is kind of our job, right? To let human beings know there is another way. And parenthetically, there's a new video out called Cloud Never Dies. I don't know if anybody's seen it. It's a really very nice, short, 28-minute, just kind of a documentary biography of Thich Nhat Hanh's life, and narrated by Peter Coyote, and it's free. You can just go on the website called The Cloud Never Dies. So I was watching it. It's quite moving. But it ended with Thay saying these words. And I sort of feel like this is his message to us, you know, with all his body of teachings. It's like, you know, what's the message? And so this is these were vignettes of him giving various talks and interviews, and this was right at the end. He said, "It is my conviction that we cannot change the world if we are not capable of changing our way of thinking, our consciousness. That is why awakening, collective change in our way of thinking, our way of seeing things, is very crucial. And all of us can help promote that. Our task is to come together and produce that kind of collective awakening. And there are many ways in order to bring about that kind of collective awakening and change. And that is why to learn how to change our way of living so that there is more mindfulness, more peace, more love is a very urgent thing. And we can do that beginning now, today." So this is You know, this is the great message of a man whose Buddhist practice was formed in the crucible of war, of violence, of hatred, of a you know, culture and country torn apart by hatred and anger and destruction. And out of that comes this plea, right? Peace begins with me. You know, this is his plea. We want a peaceful world, we have to become peaceful people, right? We want a world free of anger and hatred, we have to uproot the seeds of anger and hatred in ourselves. You know, there's all kinds of geopolitical, sociological, the talking heads probably, you know, are all going on about, I don't watch TV, so I don't know, you know, about the war and the causes of the war, you know, and why Putin's doing this and why, you know, that's like, these are the symptoms of a deeper sickness within the human mind, right? The sickness of egoism, of self-centeredness and self-interest. And out of that comes anger and fear and despair. And, you know, and a lot of times both individuals and the world kind of keep that under wrap for a while. But then with causes and conditions, we see when it erupts, it's there it is. You know, because all human beings have those seeds. We have in our consciousness wholesome seeds, unwholesome seeds, positive seeds, and those that are not positive. And it depends what's being watered, what we as individuals water within our own consciousness, but what society is watering in us, right? So that's why I want to talk about love and compassion. Because, you know, this is part of, this is the collective awakening, right? That we need to be aware of. Because a collective awakening means there has to be a change in consciousness of each human being, right? That's the only way it's ever gonna be sustained, or else we just gonna stumble about, right? In reactivity, sometimes like this, sometimes like that, both as individuals and as peace peoples and countries, we just stumble about from peace to war, right? From magnanimous humanitarian offerings and then selfishness. I could just take care of myself, you know, and this is, so if we want it to be more continuous, we have to really think about how do I transform the mind? How do I transform the seeds that are in the mind of each and every human being? And there is no greater power than the power of loving kindness and compassion. You know, there are many teachings in Buddhism. Many very wise teachings in Buddhism, many great, wonderful techniques for mindfulness and meditation, how to calm the mind, how to develop insight into the mind, how to kind of see things more clearly and within oneself in the world. But we still are left with that challenge, you know, since, especially as lay people, right, who are always interacting with each other, you know, what is the most powerful guide that I can have in terms of my interactions with other human beings? And when I say that, I mean other human beings, like family, friends, colleagues, neighbors, society, and as it goes out, right? And the Buddha gave teachings on that. He called them the four measurables. Four boundless qualities of the mind. And two of them, which really I think are, there are four But the two that probably get the most press are the practices of metta and karuna, loving kindness and compassion. And they're not just kind of moral or ethical or philosophical stances. In the Buddhist tradition, they are actually meditative states that we train in. We train our mind, because it is our mind that has to be reformed, you see. It doesn't mean all of us here aren't capable in our life of acting kindly to people, right? Of acting, responding compassionately to suffering people, right? We've all done it, and we all probably do it. But in Buddhism, that doesn't mean that we have a mind of loving kindness and compassion, okay? Because that's a constant, you see, as opposed to an episodic reactivity. You see, if we were to take a very clear look at our mind and said, and ask ourselves, well, let's just do this right now. So just close your eyes a second and ask yourself, if I just kind of took a quick inventory of where my mind is all day, as I interact with the world, as I interact with people, right? If I just took a look at my mind, you know, 95% loving, kind, compassionate ways of thinking. Is that what's going on in there? 80%? 50%? 40%? This is kind of a quantitative analysis, you know. If I was really honest, how often during the day do I really have, does my mind naturally generate those kinds of thoughts? Right. If you were to put a percent on it. And then ask yourself, how often during the day does my mind generate thoughts? Critical thoughts, judgmental thoughts, angry, irritated, you know, that whole spectrum. What percentage of my mind gets involved in that? And see, this is our, you know, this is our minds, you see. And if we look very, as we're supposed to in the practice, be mindful of our mind, we're mindful of our body, we're mindful of our breath, we're mindful of our mind, which means we're mindful of the mind states that arise in our mind. We can see how easy it is for the minds of human beings to go so quickly into anger, into hatred. Because the quotient in the mind is not a quotient that is primarily one of loving kindness and compassion. You see? Again, this doesn't mean that we are not capable of these kinds of actions and thoughts, but they tend to be more random, or they're just for particular people. Right? For particular people. But it's not a generous mind that offers it to all people. So like we take the Ukraine situation, and we find that naturally our compassion and understanding goes out to who? Ukrainians. You see, we don't have to think about it. You see, oh, natural. But in Buddhism, we want to extend it to everyone. Because, you know, those Russian soldiers, they suffer too. They're just following orders. Right? We don't know what their experience is, do we? You know, we don't know what their experience is, what their seeds are, what the experience of, I don't know, we learned it was supposed to, they were told it was going to be a cakewalk, right? They were told they were going to be welcomed as liberators, right? What's their experience when they find that's not true? When they see their comrades being killed and, you know what I mean? So it's like you see, oh, all victims. Everyone's a victim. So we want to learn how to develop a mind that can embrace with loving kindness and compassion everyone. Because in Buddhism, you see, we look at other human beings as objects, right? Like one-dimensional, and we label them friend, enemy, right? But that's very one-dimensional. We forget that every human being, just like me, has a wide complexity of experience inside them. Right? We might call that their inner life or their subjectivity, just kind of who they are as a being, the same way I am a being, which is different than this, you see. This is one-dimensional. This it doesn't have any subjectivity. It doesn't have any ability to feel in any, or doesn't have the complexity of human experience. You see what I'm saying? And so what Buddhism says about within the subjectivity of all beings, it's quite simple. No human being wants to suffer. Right? No human being wants to suffer. And all human beings want to be happy. All human beings want to be happy. And when you live your life seeing all human beings as no different than me, that however they have gotten distorted by life, underneath that distortion is this subjective experience of, I don't want to suffer. I want to be happy. I don't want my loved ones, my family, you know, however far you extend it, to suffer. I want them to be happy. Right? And so, I guess that's why, when Thich Nhat Hanh encourages us for a collective awakening that begins with each of us. This is what we're talking about. You see, these aren't abstract words. It means we have to awaken to this fundamental sameness of the human experience, right? That cuts across all culture, all caste and class and race and religion and all the ways that we divide ourselves up, right? We're endlessly dividing ourselves up like we're objects because we just see the outer, right? But inwardly, all human beings are the same. And so this collective awakening that Thich talks about in terms of how it occurs within us as individuals is, that's our task as individuals, right? That's our task. An easy task? No. No. But that's what the practice is about. And there is no better practice to kind of quickly get there than this cultivation of Well, first by seeing this equality. And when you see the equality, you clearly understand, since all beings want to be happy, that's metta, that's loving kindness. Right? Wishing, wanting, all beings to be happy. I want to be happy. I want my children to be happy. I want my grandchildren to be happy. I want all my family to be happy. And I want all my friends to be happy. I want all my community to be happy. I'd like everybody on Nebraska Avenue to be happy. You see? And when that becomes our, when we have trained our mind that that becomes our mind state and the way we relate to all human beings, no matter where we encounter them in the store, we encounter them at work, right? That we see their inner subjectivity, no matter how they're presenting, right? No matter how unkind they may be acting, right? Because again, people get twisted. I was talking to a student the other day who was feeling their subjectivity as being sort of a life of just pain, difficulty, disappointment, all kinds of things, right? And what I said to them, and I was trying to tell them, you know, that in our way of seeing things, that in their true nature, there is none of that exists, that all happened. You weren't born that way. Causes and conditions, life, you know, help create those painful experience, but that's not you. So I used I think it's a example in Buddhism. You know, you take a rope, right? And when you have a rope, it's flexible, it's adaptable, right? It's pliable, and it's very useful. You can use a rope for many things, right? But if you take that rope and you start making knots in it, and more knots in it, and more knots in it, that it ends up being a big knot. It has no flexibility, it has no pliability, it has no use, right? And if you don't know anything about rope, you might say, throw it out, get rid of it. But if you know that knots can be untied, right? And you know, there are always people who are better at this than others. Sometimes the people in our family, we give the knots to them, right? But if you know, oh, you know, the rope is still there. You know, all we got to do is untie the knots. And you go through a process of untying the knots, and what do you find? A nice rope, pliable, flexible, and capable of doing many good things. You see? And that's us. You know, we've taken our true nature, our pure nature, our original nature, we've taken our good heart, our natural openness, all the things we came into this world with, but we've gotten knotted up, right? And for many of us, we've forgotten our ropeness, and we're just caught in seeing ourselves as just a bunch of knots. Do you know what I'm saying? And seeing other people. So loving kindness is both for ourselves and others. We see other people's, we always see them as a bunch of knots. We don't see the rope. We don't see the potential and the possibility is still there. Right. So to cultivate loving kindness as a practice and to really make that, you know, again, the thing about loving kindness, it's a practice you can take with you. It's a practice that's, you know, we can work on it on the mat, we can work it at home, we can read about it, do meditations, I won't be going into them today, but we do a lot of them in our community. But the best practice is just do it in life. Right? As you go through your day, train the mind to, as you encounter beings, you know, I want you to be happy. I want you to be happy. And you know, as we go through life, we do actions to support happiness in others, right? I mean, saying hello to someone, you know, with a genuine smile on your face, right? Asking them how they are, genuinely, you know? Letting them know that you are, you know, that you see them. I find that a lot, you know, we for those of you who are online, you know, our center's on Nebraska Avenue. There's a lot of stuff going on Nebraska Avenue. A lot of suffering. You know, the least I can do when I encounter these men and women is to be present to them and to engage with them in conversation and show interest in them in their life, right? And you know, find out their story of how they ended up on Nebraska Avenue, you know? And in my own way to try to give them hope and possibility. Change is always possible, you know. So again, we can be very supportive in our families, again, at work, in our communities, in participating in this cultivation of loving kindness, right? As a cultural norm. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Right? If that was a cultural norm in our society, right? But our politicians, political leaders, and everybody we're talking about, you know, our team leaders at work, you know, stressing kindness. How can we be kind to each other? How can we nurture each other's happiness? Is that what your team leader's talking to you about? No. They're talking about what? Getting the work done, productivity, how we can be more efficient. I mean, I understand that, but you see, it's we're missing that the subjectivity of each of us, the humaneness of each of us, what's really going on with each of us, you see. And so that's loving kindness, metta. The other is karuna, which is compassion, which again, it's, you know, it doesn't mean empathy, which is often the word in English. We think of compassion as I'm empathic with human beings who are suffering. In Buddhism, compassion, the word karuna is, it's active. It means I want to alleviate the suffering of beings. I want the suffering of beings to be alleviated, which is very different than, you know, empathy is connective, right? Empathy connects us to people who are suffering. Right? But I mean, I don't want to dismiss it, but it's like, okay, you know the expression bleeding heart? A lot of people have bleeding hearts. Oh, their heart breaks for the suffering of the world, right? I mean, that's good, that's empathy. It's better than being indifferent to it. But, okay, what do you want to do? I mean, what do you want to do? The one thing we can always do is begin with ourselves. there are parts of myself that are still suffering, right? If there are parts of myself that are in pain, presently, or that we are still carrying stuff from our past. Have each of us made the vow, I want to free myself of all my own suffering? That's compassion for oneself. Compassion is not just an acknowledgement that you're suffering or you had a difficult childhood, you know. Compassion means, I want to free myself from suffering. I want to untie those knots within myself. Okay? Compassion means I look around, you know, often to people that I'm closest to, family, friends, you know. I really want to let them know that I'm aware of their suffering, and I want to help them in any way I can to alleviate their suffering. How can I be of help? How simple. How can I be of help to you? What can I do for you? So, you know, again, as Thich Nhat Hanh says, he starts big. We need this collective awakening. We want to transform the world. We want a collective awakening. And we go, we all sign up for that. So, you know, we can all, yeah, I agree. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Okay, but what does that mean today? What does this mean in my life? You know, what's the reality, the practicality? So he says we need to change our way of life. Mindfulness, more peace, more love. This is an urgent thing. Again, we may not be able to heal the deep wound of what's going on in Ukraine. Right? But, you know, there are wars going on closer to home. Many people have still a lot of war going on inside them. So we can begin here. And that's, that seems to be hard for many of us. I don't know why. You know, it's so much easier to be global, to care about all the suffering that's going on out there that we're just really hearing about through the news or the media. We're not really in touch with it, you see. But because we are in touch with the media reports, we think we're in touch with it, but we're really not. But there, again, probably is suffering close to home, within ourselves, within our families, friends at work, communities, where there are things that we could do to help. Right. This is very important. You know, so if you ask me, what is what we do here about? What's the Florida Community of Mindfulness, you know, about? You know, we're participants in this collective awakening. We're doing our little piece. And hopefully there are many, 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 many different kinds of communities and groups all around the world doing their piece, right? So collective awakening is, means collective, but it's made up of individuals and groups, right? So what are we doing here? Right? What are we doing today? We're learning, training, and how to be mindful, how to be present. Come out of our heads, come out of our thoughts, come out of our views, and just be present to our natural humanness of just being alive, right? Knowing who we are. Learning to be, to calm ourselves, to calm our minds, to become peaceful people. Now what are we doing? We're talking about loving kindness and compassion for ourselves and others. Right? So we can enter the world in a different way than perhaps we have historically done it, or a much more conscious way. And understand this is our practice. Well, the Buddha taught four measurables. He said, this is the key practice for the world, for how we interact with the world. So let me stop here and open it up. Open it up to questions, comments, because, you know, it's not easy. Change is never easy. People may have questions about how you do it, how you practice it, how you apply it. Very specific situations, people. Some people are hard, right? You know, some people are easy to love. I often say to you don't get any credit for that. You know, it's the ones that are a challenge to love, to be kind to be compassionate for. That's how we stretch. That's how we open our hearts. So, questions? Is there a mic? And so people at home can just raise their hand or chat in. So the chat function at the bottom of your screen, just chat in your question to and Brian. If it's like a little involved, you can always just ask them to share it, you know, to say it out loud. Okay, but at least you'll see what's coming in. Okay? Yeah. Okay, so Juan in the hall has a question or something?
Yes, sir. So would you say that the, if I understand correctly, your teaching is analogous to each of us just being a wave? And then us understanding that the wave is...
Us being awake?
A wave of water.
A wave, okay.
A wave of water, yes. So, and then each of us is a wave and is part of the same ocean, and each of us is water.
That's a good analogy. So Juan is saying, for those in here, so is it sort of like all human beings, all the human experience, we're like waves on the water, but all waves are part of the water. Yeah, that's a wonderful way to see it. You know, I mean, we just see the wave. We just see the individuality. We just see the superficiality. We don't see, all the waves are part of this great ocean, and this great ocean is deep and wide and vast. And is capable of being calm, it's capable of being waves, it's capable of being, 12-foot waves, and it's capable of anything. Yeah, but fundamentally, we are just waters, we are just waves on the water. I mean, interconnection, interbeing, I mean, these are fundamental teachings of the Buddha. This is when we talk about a collective awakening, because more and more our world, a great student of history, it could always have been this way. But, separate, division. We're always trying to define our differences, how I'm different than you. You see, it just keeps, that seems to be, cultures, countries, races, sexes, ages, It's like, you see, that's the culture of individuality, which is so prevalent these days. And while there's certainly, it's not like I'm saying there's no place for individuality and individual uniqueness and cultural uniqueness and all that good stuff, but without that awareness of interconnection, you see, it's like if each wave goes, hey, I'm here alone, and I'm a hell of a wave, right? You know what I mean? And look at all those small waves out there. You see what I'm saying? There's no connection. Everybody laughs, like, that's crazy, right? But that's the way we human beings live. We don't understand. We're all interconnected. We're all part of this together. Everything is affected by everything else, interbeing. you know, interaction. All our actions have results. They ripple out. Individual actions become collective actions. Just like, right? You know, like when we're at the beach, what do we see? We see the wave, right, coming in. I don't know, I'm not an expert on waves, but, you know, I mean, aren't it like the cause of it could be where? Where is the cause of wave? Where does a wave begin? The mysteries of life, right? But we know the wave doesn't just appear by itself. The wave is part of the water, part of the ocean, part of the wind. And there could be all kinds of things going on out there for hundreds and thousands of miles that are somehow bringing this wave to Pasagril, right? That we're looking at, but we don't see that. So we don't see our interconnection. We don't see that we are the manifestation of so much history, you know, that each of us are, an individual manifestation of so much history within our own families, within our own, you know, culture, and it's all just manifesting. It's manifesting here, but we don't see this larger, interconnection with all life, you see? And again, you know, at other times, when the world wasn't so connected, right? You know, hundreds of years ago, when the world wasn't so connected, and there was no media, and there were no telephones, and you kind of didn't know what was going on outside your village much. You see what I'm saying? It might not have mattered that much, but in this world that we live in, that is so interconnected, right? I mean, didn't the pandemic just show us that? Whew. Just like that, right? Spreads all around the world. Why? Because we're interconnected. We can't play at this anymore. Because the whole world is just connected. And very powerfully connected and moving quite speedily. And so this capacity to kind of wake up and see this is very important. Anyhow, it's a long-winded, thank you. Whew. Forgive me, all from a wave. Are there other questions? Okay. Okay. Yeah. So that's it. You know. So the question is, sounds great, Fred. You know, love to be compassionate and kind to the whole world, but how can you do that if you're not that way within yourself? And I would certainly say, yeah. You know. I often say to people here we practice what's called Mahayana Buddhism, the Bodhisattva way, you know, I vow to liberate all beings, you know. I would say to people, you've made the vow to liberate all beings. Well, you're a being, you know, and you're the first one that you encounter every day, you know. So you gotta begin with yourself, you see? You have to liberate yourself. So we want to learn. We want to learn. We want to heal. That's what we call our path, healing and transformation. We need to learn to what? To understand that from beginning with me, underneath it all, you know, I was saying to somebody the other day who had kind of, you know, gotten into all kinds of bad places in life, left a lot of wounds. But the point I made to them, you know, underneath all that darkness, you were doing all those things because two reasons. You wanted to end your suffering and you wanted to be happy. And that's true for everyone. We're just ignorant. We just don't know how to do it. So we do it in all kinds of ways that just produce more suffering, you see. But underneath it is, yeah, I do all these things because I'm trying to get some happiness. I do all these things because I want some kind of remediation from suffering, you see. And so that produces some understanding, some acceptance, and some acknowledgement. You know, then metta becomes possible. See, metta is that acknowledgement, but then you consciously say, I want to be happy. You say that to yourself. That's what I want. I want to be happy. And once you say that, and then you add the compassion, I want to end my suffering. See, there's the intention. There's the aspiration. That has to come first, you see. And once you say that strongly to yourself, yeah, that's my goal in life. I want to free myself from suffering, and I want to be happy. I want to be at peace. Now we have parameters, you see. Now we have a template, right? How to respond to, you know, all kinds of things in life, things that arise in me, desires, things, you know, people ask me to do things, you know. Does this support the ending of my suffering? And does it support my happiness? Or does it not? And if I'm really serious about uprooting my suffering and creating happiness for myself, then the choices I make, you know, very particular, the choices I make in what I do and who I hang out with and the kind of experiences I have and the kind of thoughts I have. You know, even more important, because Buddhism puts a lot of emphasis on the mind, the kind of thoughts I have. You know, when you find yourself, you know, going around and around in irritation and anger, repeating some drama, you know, to stop and go, hold on. Didn't I just, you know, 10 minutes ago make the, set the aspiration, you know, I don't want to support suffering in myself anymore. And this, look what I'm doing. I mean, so it's very practical. Okay, very practical. But it comes from, again, that intentionality. I want to be happy, to be at peace, to have a loving mind, a kind mind. I don't want to nurture anger. I don't want to nurture hatred. I don't want to nurture this stuff anymore. Right? And now we have a template. So as we go through life and all this stuff arises, we have a way of reminding ourselves, hold on, didn't I, you know. That's practice, you see. I often say to people, you know, Buddhist practice is just like practicing the piano, practicing an instrument, right? You're trying to hit the right notes, but you often hit the wrong notes. And, you know, when you're practicing an instrument, every time you hit a wrong note, what do? Beat yourself up? Storm away from the piano? Is that what you do? Anybody ever learn to play an instrument? Hopefully you have learned better. Right? I mean, the best thing is, right, correct? Yeah, it's not helpful. Yeah, it's just simply, you know, let me come back and hit the right note. And the more right notes I hit, I get, you know, it sounds better. And the same way with our life, with our actions. You know, the more right notes we hit, right? Practice, practice, practice. Question in the hall? And then we'll come to one. Just hold on, because there are a lot of people online.
More to what you just said already, but I work in social work too, and I feel like what you're saying resounds so much with, in our work, we have it like on the board huge, and it says, you know, all parents want to do best by their children. It doesn't always feel like it.
Yeah, yeah.
But that same intention of that undercurrent.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, I used to work with child abuse and stuff and parents, and yeah, I mean, they're just lost, you know. They're not, you know, every now and then you really meet somebody who's just, you know, really disturbed. But most, they're just lost, you know, lost in their stuff. And underneath it, yeah, you know, they'd like to be happy. They'd like their children to be happy, but they don't know how. They don't have the resources. Yeah, it's not easy. More online. Yeah, so the question is, well, again, we can use poor Putin. I mean, now he's, you know, remember, I mean, what, 20 years ago, it was Saddam Hussein. You know what I mean? We kind of elevate people to be these symbols of evil. Yeah. Right, yeah. He's a product of his causes and conditions, you know? As Shanti Davis said, that's the humility. If we take Putin, who I don't know personally, and I don't really know much about his life, but if I know this, if I was born to his family, if I was raised exactly the way he was raised, in the culture he was raised in, at the time he was raised in, and had every experience that he had, I would probably be like him. That's understanding. That softens. You know, you look at these characters, do they look happy to you? You know? I mean, if you look at them, they're not happy people. They're angry people. They're self-righteous. I mean, they're sick people, right? I mean, but you look at them and you know. Now, again, that doesn't mean you give them a carte blanche to run around the world and just create misery for people. I'm not saying that, so please understand that. But even sometimes you have to act forcibly to prevent harm to beings. One of the vows we take is to protect beings from harm. Sometimes you have to act forcibly. It's not about the action, it's about the mind state. One can act firmly and still care about the well-being of the person, understand that. Anybody here ever been a parent? I mean, did you ever have to be really firm with your kids? You know, give them that look. That doesn't mean you hate them. Because you can actually love them and understand, you know, them, and you can realize, yeah, they don't have the ability at this point not to do harm to themselves or somebody else. Right? So we as a parent often have to act, right? But if we don't, you see, for so many of us in the world, we have to get really angry. You see, we have to be full of anger and hate before we can act to protect life. If we didn't act from emotionality, but acted from love and caring, we could probably be acting much sooner and more wisely. Because anger, anybody ever been angry? Anybody ever been really angry? Clear, are you very clear-headed at that point? See all the options and the possibilities? Impossible. So this is why, you know, this is why it's dangerous to work on emotionality. Yes, others? So again, compassion means we understand that human beings suffering. Yeah, so the question is, how do I practice compassion in my work environment? Well, you know, we often, again, turn human beings, including our work colleagues, into objects, right? They're my work colleagues, right? We don't see them as human beings. We don't see their subjectivity. We don't see that, you know, that they have their lives, they have their stuff, they're human, you know, they're complex. Stuff's going on in their life. They're dealing with sickness, old age, and change, and, you know, and they're dealing with all the same stuff I am, you see? And we hear about their lives, and they, yeah, so we have to be willing to touch into the humaneness of the human beings we encounter, including people at work, and to look for opportunities. Again, I know the workplace is a place to get work done, but, you know, to look for opportunities to connect with human beings on a humane level. And if you see a colleague suffering, and often you know it because you can see how they look, or you can see it in their face, or the little hints they drop, you know, why don't we reach out to them? Why don't we let them know, I see, it seems to me you're suffering or something's going on. Can you share that with me? I'm willing to listen. I mean, see how simple that is? It's not like you go barging into people, you know. Bodhisattva of the year, you know. I'm here to help. So I'll put up a little sign on your desk. Anybody suffering, come to me. No, I'm not. Please understand, I'm not suggesting that. A little more subtle. Yeah, many opportunities. Again, the less preoccupied with self we are, the less we are in our own little narrow box, the more open we are, the more accepting we are, the more willingness we are to connect to those around us. You know, it'll just happen. We'll see lots of opportunities. But we have to be, especially I think in certain environments, that we have to be a little courageous, because that's kind of usually not done, you know what I mean? We're just, we're colleagues, right? We don't kind of pretend that we're really human beings, complex and have all kinds of stuff going on. We're just work people, you see? So sometimes it takes a little risk to kind of, you know, connect with somebody, let them know, oh, I see you. See, you're a human being. That's what our practice is about. Are the kids here? What? They're coming in the back door. So good. So loving kindness and compassion, the way to be. Again, you know, we continue in our community to offer meditations, practices, retreats, intensives, but you don't have to wait. We can begin today. Thank you, everyone.